Matiya Vidushita Devai. Patadbe Asahishnubi. Yo Narada Vachastatyam. Nagrahisam Asattama. Mati. Intelligence. Vidushita. Contaminated. Devai. By the demigods. Patadbi. It would fall down. Asahishnubhi. Intolerant.
I who?
Narada. Of the great sage Narada. Vacha.
Of the instructions.
Tatyam.
The truth.
No.
Not.
Agrahisham.
Could accept.
Asattama.
The most wretched.
Translation. Dhruva Maharaj speaking. Since all the demigods who are situated in the higher planetary system will have to come down again, they are all envious of my being elevated to Vaikuntha Loka by devotional service. These intolerant demigods have dissipated my intelligence, and only for this reason could I not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of sage Narada. Purport. As shown by many instances in the Vedic literature, when a person undergoes severe austerities, the demigods become very much perturbed because they are always afraid of losing their posts as the predominating deities of the heavenly planets. It is known to them that their position in the higher planetary system is impermanent, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, Chine Punye Marcha Lokam Prashanti. It is said in the Gita that after exhausting the results of their pious activities, all the demigods who are inhabitants of the higher planetary system have to come back again to this earth. It is a fact that the demigods control the different activities of the limbs of our bodies. Factually, we are not free even in moving our eyelids. Everything is controlled by them. Dhruva Maharaj's conclusion is that these demigods, being envious of his superior position in devotional service, conspired against him to pollute his intelligence. And thus, although he was the disciple of a great Vaishnava, Narada Muni, he could not accept Narada's valid instructions. Now Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he had neglected these instructions. Narada Muni had asked him, "Why should you bother about insult or adjuration from your stepmother?" He, of course, said to Dhruva Maharaj that since Dhruva was only a child, what did he have to do with such insult or adoration? But Dhruva Maharaj was determined to achieve the benediction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore Narada advised him to go back home for the time being, and in mature time, he could try to practice devotional service. Dhruva Maharaj regretted that he had rejected the advice of Narada Muni and was adamant in asking him for something perishable, namely revenge against his stepmother for her insult and the possession of the kingdom of his father. Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he could not take seriously the instruction of his spiritual master, and that his consciousness was therefore contaminated. Still, the Lord is so merciful that due to Dhruva's execution of devotional service, he offered Dhruva the ultimate Vaishnava goal. Translation again. Since all the demigods who are situated in the higher planetary system will have to come down again, they are all envious of my being elevated to Vaikuntha Loka by devotional service. These intolerant demigods have dissipated my intelligence, and only for this reason could I not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of sage Narada. Om Jnanachirmadandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We should understand that in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, you are dealing with shame, guilt, regret. Now you might say, what does Dhruva Maharaj have to feel so guilty and regretful about? Why is he feeling such intense shame? He got the kingdom. Isn't that what it's all about? He got the facility to control and enjoy. That is our purpose in the material world. As I was explaining at Melbourne Uni a few days ago, we may think, that our desire to enjoy is innocent with very few repercussions, very few negative bounces attached to it. But, as the Shastra explains, as soon as you try to enjoy in this world, there must be some control involved. Material enjoyment and material control go together. Whether in making money, at school, or at home in relationships, there's always some control associated with the desire to enjoy. Because we are so tiny by constitutional position. We are tiny particles of Krishna. And therefore, if we want to enjoy materially, we have to go outside of ourselves. And that's where all the danger is. We're dependent on conditions and circumstances and persons outside of us. We're not Atmarama. We're not independent in our enjoying ability. Because independence in enjoying cannot happen on the material platform. So therefore, in order to enjoy materially, there has to be an element of control involved. No matter how innocent or subtle. You have to shape circumstances, right? You have to influence persons, right? Even your dearly beloved, your own family members. You have to somehow or other get them to act in such a way that it'll be pleasing for your existence. So this is the problem with material existence. We always have to depend on persons and circumstances and situations outside of ourselves. Whereas Krishna never does that. Krishna is completely independent. And the best way to understand Krishna's independence is by looking at Krishna's pleasure and how he enjoys. That's the true test. Similarly, if you want to understand your dependence, if you want to understand how conditioned you are, just see what happens when you try to be happy, when you try to enjoy. You undergo so many risks, so many dependencies, so many conditions. Whereas Krishna's enjoyment never is reduced, never is affected by external circumstances. Krishna is perfect and complete in his pleasure. I've explained many times that Krishna, as explained in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Krishna has a special characteristic called Swaraja Lakshmi. What is the significance of that Swaraja Lakshmi? Please remember. First of all, understand that Krishna has unlimited desires. I've often asked you, count how many material desires that you have. You might think it's a vast ocean, and it feels like that sometimes. But you actually have difficulty getting past 5 desires. I want to enjoy my body. I want a peaceful mind. I want money. I want my family to have whatever they want. I want world peace. You're already up to 5. It's hard, right? To just get up to 10 desires. So how can you understand Krishna who has unlimited desires? You can't conceive of that. But not only does Krishna have unlimited desires, but he has the Suraja Lakshmi characteristic. He can independently fulfill every one of his unlimited desires. Now you just see what you have to go through to try and fulfill one desire. You have to work so hard, there's so much paranoia, anxiety. Will it work out? Will I be understood? Will I achieve the goal? Just for one desire. And there's so many dependencies and so many contingencies. What will the weather be like? What will my health be like? Will I have enough money? What will the traffic be like? On and on and on it goes. What will the mood of the person I'm with be like? Will they be in a good mood today or a bad mood? Will my children misbehave? On and on and on it goes. Just to try and enjoy one desire. Whereas Krishna is completely independent in fulfilling every one of his unlimited desires. What about Dhruva Maharaj and his desires? He is feeling shame, regret, and guilt. So you would say, but he got what he wanted. He's going to rule a kingdom on earth for 36,000 years with unimpeded senses, and then he'll go to Vaikuntha Loka. He'll get to see that his stepmother, his stepbrother, even his father, they'll get some problems because even though Dhruva forgave them, still, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is watching and doesn't like that his devotees are in any way offended. Still, you're looking at Dhruva's situation and thinking, what is he regretting? He's got everything. He's got a material kingdom for 36,000 years. And it's also he gets to go back to Vaikuntha Loka. Case closed. Finished. Arrivo. So why is Dhruva lamenting? Why does he feel shame? He's lamenting because now he is fully aware of pure devotional service, Shuddha Bhakti. By the touch of the Lord's conch shell on his head, Dhruva can understand perfectly what is bhakti and what is the best reason to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in fact, the only legitimate reason, as Lord Chaitanya demonstrates. Mama janmini janmini shrede bhavatad bhaktir ahoy tiki tway. Lord Chaitanya is saying that I don't even mind taking birth after birth as long as I have devotional service. Now, Lord Chaitanya is here indicating that even mukti, liberation, freedom from material existence, cessation of the cycle of birth and death, is not his goal. Now, Dhruva Maharaj was not aiming for liberation, right? He was not engaged in devotional service under the tutelage of Narada Muni for liberation. Whereas Lord Chaitanya is pointing out, even liberation is not the proper goal for a real devotee. But this is how far under the bar was Dhruva Maharaj. What did he want? It wasn't liberation. It was not mukti. He wanted revenge against his stepmother, revenge against his stepbrother, and he wanted the greatest kingdom that had ever been had. He wanted a kingdom greater than what his father had, what his grandfather had, even a greater kingdom than Lord Brahma, his great-grandfather, had. That was his motivating desire. Remember his words in the previous chapter. Because he's referring back to that time before his 6 months of austerities when Narada Muni came to him to instruct him. by Narada Muni's approaching Dhruva after Dhruva left the palace to find Vishnu in the forest. Narada Muni is indicating that when someone wants to serve Krishna, Krishna makes arrangements. Narada Muni is part of Krishna's arrangement to give Dhruva the greatest fortune, even though Dhruva is just a little boy. So Narada Muni gave Dhruva perfect advice. It was a wonder for Narada Muni. What was so astonishing to Narada Muni? He said, Aho teja chatriyanam. I can't believe it, these chatriyas. They're way over the top. Just because of a little insult, a five-year-old boy is totally bent out of shape and on the warpath. I can't believe this. Aho teja chatriyanam. These chatriyas and their Ishwar Bhava, their desire to control, and their sense of prestige. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that prestige is an essential part of chatriya life. Yudde chatriya palayanam. Never turn your back in battle. So Dhruva was not going to turn his back on an insult. He's a chatriya. He's a Vedic warrior administrator. But Narada Muni is pointing out, look, you're only 5 years old. Generally, a little child doesn't care about praise or insult. They just laugh whatever you say. Were you like that when you were a little child? If someone would say, you're dumb, you would say, ah. If someone would say, you're smart, ah. Right? So that's what Narada Muni is telling Dhruva. Generally, a five-year-old boy doesn't react to praise or insult. But why are you so reacting in this way? Anyway, Narada Muni points out, since you are reacting, even though you're 5 years old, let me explain to you that honor and dishonor comes and goes according to your karma. So there's no reason for you to take things so seriously. Better you go home. You're looking for Vishnu? Oh, it's very difficult attaining Vishnu. Great saints and mystics have tried to attain Vishnu. Sometimes they're successful, sometimes not. Better go home. Come back when you're older. So Narada Muni instructed Dhruva Maharaj that you should not take this insulting situation in the palace very seriously. But let's go back to the palace now. We'll go back even further. It was an excruciating situation. A boy, a five-year-old boy, trying to climb on the lap of his father to share the lap with his stepbrother, his brother who was born from another mother. And the father is so attached to his favorite wife that he doesn't acknowledge his own son climbing on his lap. It's very devastating. But things got worse. The father's co-wife, his favorite one, Saruchi, she noticed Dhruva trying to climb up on the father's lap and the father's ignoring Dhruva. And she decided to rub salt in the wound. Let's take this further. Let's make this wound even deeper. She said, Dhruva, don't you understand your misfortune? You're not my son. You're the son of that other woman. Let me give you some advice. If you want some hope for you, if you want some genuine well-being, you should perform severe austerities and penances. And then if you're fortunate in your next life, you'll get to take birth in my womb. These words resounded throughout the whole palace, so much that by the time Dhruva reached his mother, Suniti, he ran crying to his mother. She already knew. The palace was just buzzing with talk. And she was helpless. What could she do? She explained to Dhruva the way of palace life. I'm not your father's favorite wife. He doesn't look at me anymore. What can I do? She told him, you're coming to me, your mother, seeking shelter. But all I can say is there's someone who is more affectionate than millions of mothers. So Dhruva wanted to know, who's that? Vishnu, where do you find him? Go to the forest. Dhruva was gone. He was so determined to achieve his goals. So he had been through an excruciating situation. Yet Narada was giving him perfect transcendental advice. Narada was telling him, don't take it so seriously. Happiness and distress comes and goes according to your karma. How many of you could take that kind of advice seriously? Some setback happens, you lose your job, you don't get the PR, something. And then someone tells you, happiness and distress comes and goes according to your karma. What's the first thing you'll say? Yes, I know, but. We're living the real life. I know Bhagavad Gita. But in real life, I'm feeling a disaster. So Dhruva told Narada that, I hear what you're saying, and what you're saying is true, but it can't apply to me because I'm a warrior. I'm a Kshatriya. I can't turn my back on an insult, even though what you say is true. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that actually what Dhruva was saying was even more intense. Although he spoke respectfully to Narada Muni, actually what he was saying is, what are you talking to me like I'm a brahmana for, those weak, cowardly brahmanas? I am a heroic Kshatriya. I cannot turn my back on insults. I have to show courage and bravery. Your advice is good for those weak brahmanas, weak bodies, cowards who never get into a battle. That was his bottom line, actually. But no, he spoke outwardly, very respectfully to Narada Muni, that, sorry, I hear what you're saying, but I can't do it. Maybe some of you can remember acting like that, responding like that when your spiritual master told you something. Or maybe your guru understood that you wouldn't follow his instructions, so therefore he didn't give you the instruction he wanted to give. It's a two-way street, you know. Teacher can only instruct a student as much as the student wants to listen. So maybe you have also been in a situation like Dhruva Maharaj. Maybe you'll be in the future. I hear what you're saying, Gurudev, but... Now, Dhruva is regretting. Why didn't I listen? But you say, what do you mean, why didn't you listen? You followed Narada Muni's instruction to get the greatest kingdom. You've got it. It's in the bag. You have outshone the competition. There'll be revenge. There'll be a material attainment. But Dhruva Maharaj is actually filled with lamentation. Try to understand his heart. He's crushed. He sees everything, the whole situation now, in crystal clear consciousness. His senses have become spiritualized. So he's trying to understand, what was I thinking when Narada Muni gave me that perfect advice? He's searching within himself. He's doing an internal scan. And then he's also doing an external scan. What outside of me could be in the environment? I know I have my anarthas, my problems, but also, he's a Kshatriya, he's analytical about pragmatics. There could be some influence in the external environment that bewildered me. Aha, the devas. That's what he's talking about in this verse. The demigods are always afraid of losing their post to someone who becomes more qualified. So perhaps these demigods, with their intolerance, dissipated my intelligence. They bewildered me. And for that reason, I couldn't accept the real benediction of Narada Muni. Envy is a part of life. It can happen even in the heavenly planets. You'll read in the fourth canto about Indra becoming envious of Prithu Maharaj. And Indra tried to block Prithu Maharaj from performing more horse sacrifices than Indra, because Indra wanted that fame of being the one who has done the most horse sacrifices. So this can go on even in the heavenly planets. What to speak of on earth? Everyone can have some experience on this earthly plane of someone being envious of you, or you being envious of someone. Bhagavatam, fifth canto, compares it to like insect noises, bird noises in the background of, as you're walking through a forest. You hear the crickets making sounds, but you can't find the crickets. You just hear their sounds. Similarly, envious talk goes on in the background. It's amazing what conditioned souls will become envious about. You live in a bigger house. You must be in debt. You married a beautiful wife. It surely wasn't because of your qualifications. It was all arranged by your parents. On and on and on it goes. Envy is the nature of, it's the essence of material existence, because it's the reason why we're here. We were envious and angry at Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. This is explained in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Of the five stages of conditioned life that cover you, the first one is tamisra, envy, anger. You say, well, how could I be angry and envious at Krishna? It's so subtle. We're thinking, why should Krishna be the only enjoyer? What about me? Not that you want to drag Krishna down, but you want his position. That's envy and very subtle anger. And of course, in impersonalism, you're thinking, all right, let Krishna be, but I'll also share equal status with Krishna. Yes, Krishna and me together, we're merged. He's the supreme enjoyer. I am the supreme enjoyer. There's no distinction. It's not that I want to remove Krishna from his post, but we both have the post. It's impersonalism. I often explain that when I was in Jagannath Puri for Rath Yatra, and the parade was about to start. And so it's a tradition there that the head of the Shankaracharya Math comes and does some puja on each cart. Just a tradition. And so I watched as he climbed up each cart and offered some puja articles to Jagannath, Baladev, and Shubhadra. And I saw what he's thinking. I know what he has to be thinking as a Mayavadi. I'm offering to myself. Because ultimately there's no distinction between myself and the Supreme in that we are all the Supreme. We are all Brahman. So that is anger and envy in a very subtle way. Drew is pointing out here that even on the heavenly planets, you'll find envy problems. So he's thinking, that must be one of the things that happen in the external environment besides my own imperfections. This is the way of analysis, internal and external. Let's try to get a glimpse into the depths of his regret and shame. He's so eloquently explaining, I, under the instructions of Narada Muni, was doing devotional service. First of all, I had instruction from Narada Muni. Secondly, Narada Muni gives me the Vishnu mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thirdly, I was executing his instructions in Madhuvan, in Vrindavan. Still, I'm focused totally on material desires. I must be mad. Then he saw the Supreme Personality Godhead, and he realized, I have been serving the person who can end the cycle of repeated birth and death, but my purpose was to ask for things that would perpetuate the cycle of repeated birth and death. This is madness. I was searching for broken pieces of glass, asking that of someone who could give me the greatest jewel. I'm like someone who approaches a king, and the king says, I can offer you anything, and I ask for a few grains of rice. How foolish I am. Several times, Dhruva refers to the cycle, the chain of repeated birth and death, samsara. I'm dealing with the person who could cut that chain, and I simply wanted things that would make the chain go on and on and on. How unfortunate I am. No one can understand the depths of my delusion. So we need to sympathize with Dhruva, but more than sympathize, let's understand the sincerity of his regret. Because otherwise, we're overwhelmed by the benediction that Dhruva got. He's got everything. All his material desires have been fulfilled. Why is he feeling so crushed? But this is the power of pure bhakti. He's understanding. The ultimate goal of life is to engage in Krishna's service simply to give Krishna pleasure. He understands all that now. And he feels so ashamed. This is real love. He's ashamed of having any other motivation than giving Krishna pleasure. He's showing you the standard of pure bhakti in such a dramatic, heart-wrenching way. So please, again, feel his shame, feel his regret, feel his lamentation, feel his guilt. It's very purifying. So therefore, as Prabhupada said in yesterday's purport, every one of us who is engaged in devotional service in Krishna consciousness should be completely free of all material aspirations. Otherwise, we will have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. So again, what do you say? I wouldn't mind lamenting like Dhruva Maharaj if I have all that he has. Yeah, I'll say some prayers of lamentation, sure. I'll do all that, but I've got the kingdom. Dhruva really meant it. How many years in bhakti will it take for us to understand that Dhruva really meant what he was saying? It's inconceivable to us, right? Dhruva really felt that he had blown the situation completely. The palace situation will change. Narada Muni, while Dhruva was in the forest, Narada Muni came and visited Dhruva's father, Maharaj Uttanapad, who was so depressed. Where did my son go? Where did my son go? And Narada Muni told him, your son's going to be the greatest devotee. So, this is palace life in the material world. What did Uttanapad do? The acharyas point out that Maharaj Uttanapad started neglecting Saruchi and focusing on Suniti. The out-of-favor wife, Dhruva's mother, became the favorite. And the wife that was the favorite, she was the outcast. Life in this world is tough, you know. But when Dhruva returned home from the forest, he showed respects to both ladies, his mother and his stepmother. He showed complete affection for his brother. Because Dhruva was no longer on the material platform. Material platform means friends and enemies. This one is helping my gratification. This one is impeding my gratification. Therefore, one is a friend, the other is an enemy. This is life in the material world. As Dhruva will point out, you dream all these kind of things. It's like when you're asleep, you create so many things in your mind. Similarly, in the dreamlike material existence, you create friends, enemies, and respond accordingly. But Dhruva was beyond all that now. He had awakened. So he's recognizing the whole mirage of material existence, and he wants no part of it. Therefore, he treats his stepmother and his brother with complete affection, showing you how all disagreements can be resolved on the bhakti platform. So please let us remember the depths of Dhruva's lamentation. He was not even aspiring for mukti. But Lord Chaitanya says, bhakti, pure bhakti is beyond even mukti. But Dhruva was low down on the scale. Kingdom, opulence, revenge, power. The key lesson you can learn from Dhruva Maharaj's history is that anyone can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is banned because of material desires. So it's a double reality, this part of the Bhagavatam. Bhakti is open to everyone, even if you have material desires. But the other side, material desires in worshiping Krishna will make you lament, even though Krishna may fulfill those desires. So therefore the bottom line, you really don't want to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. At the same time, you don't want to refrain from devotional service because you have material desires. Therefore, the Bhagavatam says, akama sava kama va, moksha kama udhara di. Whether you are free from material desires, whether you are full of material desires, whether you are lusting for liberation, for mukti, never mind, engage in Krishna's service. Still, as you engage in Krishna's service, you start to become educated about what is the real standard. And that education, and putting that education of Shuddha Bhakti, pure Bhakti into practice, that will keep you from lamenting like Dhruva Maharaj. You have time for a few questions? Yes? Yes, but the discrimination should be what gives Krishna the best pleasure. We're not Mayavadis or impersonalists. We recognize that there is variety, we recognize that there is distinction, but we base our actions on what gives Krishna the most pleasure. Let me deal with these varieties and distinctions in such a way that Krishna gets the most pleasure. So we don't deny distinctions, but we're always seeking Krishna's intelligence. How do I handle a situation? How do I handle a person or relationship for your pleasure? Friends and enemies, that's a concoction based on our own material agenda. Now Dhruva has no material agenda, so why should he have friends and enemies? Later he'll have a problem with the yakshas, but that was his doing his duty as a Vedic king. So again, because his consciousness is crystal clear in pure bhakti, he knows exactly what to do and what not to do based on how to give Krishna pleasure, not based on material distinctions that this one's my friend, this one's my enemy. Even amongst devotees, sometimes there are misunderstandings. We should serve Krishna like this. No. How can you say that? Krishna will be best served like that. We have to know how to handle that. And it takes some maturity. How to disagree in Krishna's service without developing inimical, angry feelings. It takes Krishna's help to be able to do that. Yes?
So what would have Dhruva Maharaj really felt about bhakti? What would he have felt that he's really missed the point?
What do you mean? He's explaining what he's feeling. He said, I was searching for broken pieces of glass instead of the greatest jewel. Even when the Supreme Personality of God had offered him a benediction. He said, Swaman Katato, Brahmayache, I don't want anything material from you. I'm fully satisfied. Just give me the association of your pure devotees. Bhakti is so powerful that Krishna comes under its control. The power of pure love controls even Krishna. He wants to come under the control. Britya Vashyata, it's explained in the 10th canto. He wants to come under the control, not exactly the control of his devotee, but the love of his devotee. He was bound by Mother Yashoda's love, not so much by the rope. Yes.
Guru Maharaj was sort of determined in getting Krishna. How do we get the determination? There was a material desire that Dhruva wanted to attain Krishna, he was still very determined. How do we get the same determination?
Dhruva had the expert guidance and he accepted the guidance even though his goal wasn't correct. Because of Narada Muni's expertise, Dhruva was able to make spiritual advancement in spite of his material desires. Similarly, in our Krishna conscious society, we are open to persons of all types of desires. Probably everyone here except me came to bhakti with pure desires. Never mind that you may have so many material desires, our doors are open for everyone. That's the lesson, that's one lesson that Dhruva Maharaj is showing. The door is not closed to anyone because they have material desires. Simply engage in Krishna's service and become purified. At the same time, we have the lesson that ultimately you don't want to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. So you have to see all the different facets of the diamond. And it is very essential to have the association of devotees that can purify us from our material desires. And then our desires in that association start to change. So we want to become qualified that by our sangha, by our association, others can become purified by seeing the joy of devotional service in us. Just like when you do book distribution, it's not simply the book that people are buying, they're buying your experience, they're buying the impression that you leave on them. They're thinking, oh, if this book can give me what you are showing, okay, I'll buy it. So we want to become such instruments for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we can inspire others to become purified in their desires to serve Krishna. No questions on this side? Yes.
Pure devotees, they don't blame others, but here we find apparently Dhruva Maharaj is pointing out that the demigods,
to the demigods, he couldn't follow the instructions. So why is that?
It's one of those things that happens. He's not a sentimentalist. He understands this is the material world. Even the demigods get envious. But he's mainly concerned with himself and his own mistake. But he's just making an environmental scan, as he pointed out. And by the way, these things happen. But that's not his main presentation. It's not his main issue. It's just in the course of making his presentation, he's touching upon this and letting you know these things do go on. Just to see what happened to Prithu Maharaj, just see what Indra did. Yes?
Pride and revenge are normally bad qualities, but in a kshatriya, they're okay, or they're good because they're helping to fulfill their job description that they have.
But Narada Muni was giving the benefit of his instruction and association. And Narada Muni was telling him, overlook this. So yes, what you're saying, is that true? What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Soryam tejo datir daksham yudhe chapya palayanam danam ishvara bhavas chatra. Yes, bravery, courage, never turning your cheek. That's the quality of a kshatriya. But Dhruva had contact with Narada Muni. That's why Dhruva is going to later lament. I had Narada Muni's instruction. I had the Vishnu mantra. I was in Madhuvan in Vrindavan. And still I had these crazy goals. So he's understanding that there is a level above his Chachya-ism. And now he's lamenting. Yes?
Slightly out of both questions, but I feel that I'm very new to spiritual journey.
I am too. It's only been 46 years. Every day is new.
See, I feel that I have basically everything I want. I have my peace, my joy. The only thing I dream of is actually world peace. And I know I'm not even qualified to even talk about it. But I'm being told, rather than just jumping into your mission of world peace, perhaps, you know, gain some more spiritual knowledge or spiritual practice or more business experience before trying to go out and change the world. But that's this where I'm like, I feel that I have everything and I have nothing to lose, so why not just jump straight into it? But,
definitely, the world needs more business experience. That will do it. More control for the purpose of enjoyment, more exploitation. Please come here and be educated in the science of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Find out what is real peace. Find out what is real happiness. And then you'll be qualified to share with others. So you can come here. You say you're new. You can learn to take your game to a higher level. And some humility is required for that. I often explain, in the field of classical music, there is a most famous piano school in Vienna, Austria, where many world-famous classical musicians go for their training. And this school has two rates of tuition. One rate is if you have taken piano lessons before, and the other rate is if you've never taken piano lessons before. The ones who have had piano lessons before pay more. Why is that?
They probably already have some wrong ideas.
Exactly, they have to be unlearned. Whereas, for example, what Prabhupada said about the Americans and Europeans when he first came from India to teach them bhakti, he said, in spite of their wild habits, they have one major good quality. no concoctions about Krishna. Whereas, you know, in India, so many concoctions, misconceptions. So Srila Prabhupada commented that in that sense, in spite of the lack of civilized culture, it was easier to teach Westerners because they had no preconceptions. They didn't tell him when he presented Krishna to them, they didn't say, oh, we know everything. My grandmother read me Gita when I was 5 years old. I know everything about Krishna. He didn't have to deal with all that. So please come here, be educated, learn how to apply the bhakti lifestyle. And yes, we want to change the world. But you have to become qualified to do that.
I'll sign up to
that. Huh? Okay. I will too. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.